Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullist, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Can I make it the next hour without saying the W word? Can I make it 3 days without saying the W word? Can I do it?
I don't think so.
I don't want to jinx what is about to happen come Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because it looks too perfect.
Looks pretty doggone good.
It looks perfect. Can you? Can I not? I don't want to say the word. I don't want to say the W word, but.
Just don't.
But have we ever, in the 15 Bonnaroos or so, have we ever seen a forecast like this?
No, we've seen all kinds of the other kind,
right?
Where we thought it was going to be rained out and 4 million degrees. And
4 million degrees.
I might have exaggerated.
The surface of the sun.
That's what it felt like.
I can't. Yeah, I don't good. Think. I can't even believe my eyes. Something is incorrect here. Like I almost said it.
Don't say.
All the apps. They're wrong. This is not real.
It's going to be great.
I don't think we've ever had a temperature that low. I don't think I've ever experienced Bonnaroo in the 70s during the day.
I know. Just,
like I was saying the other day, I was like, should I wear pants?
I'm just going to have to rethink my whole camping, my packing. That's what I've been doing all day is getting out all the equipment and checking it.
Do I need to bring a Snuggie?
Some sweats. Your loungers. That's what they're calling them now, your loungers.
Yeah, so this feels like, to me, this episode feels like the last day of school.
That's
we don't really have much to do. There's not really, we've covered everything we're going to cover. We're just sort of like filling in time before we got to go.
Pack and repack and stare at it.
Actually, repack is my repeat cover band.
It's a good one.
So
we're close, man. We're right on top of it.
I guess we'll go through what we're going to do today. So we'll just tie up, I guess, some loose ends and talk to two artists that we're really, really excited about. Two artists that were picks of mine that I think Barry has come around to.
Absolutely.
And
we need to tell who we are, by the way.
They have a very common theme between the two of them. Oh, sure. Yeah, we can do that, too. I'm Brad. That's Barry, if you don't know by now. This is the What Podcast, a podcast by Bonnaroovians for Bonnaroovians. 4 days away from the greatest weekend of the year. So Patrick Droney and DeLacy.
Right. Two great guests. Man, Patrick just blew my mind. I think he did yours as well.
I did not expect what he was going to say.
No.
Like, we didn't have any expectations. I've heard the two songs that I really like on Spotify. And I had a conversation with, I was just on the phone with my Warner rep, right? Just talking, you know, regular radio station stuff. And he's like, by the way, just letting you know, we got this kid named Patrick Droney that we just signed to the label. I'm like, wait a second. Patrick Droney, we've been talking about him for 3 months on this show.
Right. We discovered him, both of them, through Bonnaroo. They were both terrific interviews, and I think they're both very talented. And what connects them both, you'll hear, is they both, with their debut albums, decided to go within themselves, right, to be very personal. She's a songwriter for other people. And talks about how this album was a very personal one that she did just for herself. Didn't care if it ever got heard
right.
or not. Whereas he was a whole lot more, planned out about how his career is going. But man, that guy, his phone contacts list is
I just didn't expect to hear the bio that we heard. And look, I know I should probably be much more professional and better at this than I am. Believe me, I've been asking myself that for 20 years of my career. But I didn't read anything about him before we got on the phone with him. You know, it's not that hard to get on the phone and talk to somebody at Music and Bonnaroo.
Right.
So it's not like I did a deep dive on his bio. But boy, oh boy, did I miss a giant story.
I did. Just quickly.
Yeah, because you're a professional.
Well, that's true. But you'll hear I couldn't believe. I asked you before we even called, how old could he be?
Yeah.
Because his bio says he toured with B.B. King and James Brown. And I'm like, James Brown has been gone a long time.
Right. I mean, I looked at you. What did I tell you when I read that? I was like, he's probably just, you know, lying. He's probably just making that
up. Well, yeah, I think you thought he toured with people who had toured with them.
Yeah, it was a typo. Something. Some sort of typo.
Yeah, but no, he toured with those guys. Of course, he started as a child.
Yeah.
But man, he just kept dropping name after name after name.
It made me feel very uncomfortable. This is not fair.
Yeah, it's like, what have you done with your life to this point?
So we got Patrick Droney coming up. DeLacy, we'll start off talking to her. What I like about DeLacy is sort of the way that you pretty much, you know, put a nice bow on it. She's a singer, a songwriter. She's been writing songs for everybody else. She's had number one singles, but you'd never know it because, you know, she's just a songwriter. And now she's decided to do her own thing. And, you know, she's got a song on Top 40 Radio. And it's a damn good one, too.
Great song.
So when I do what I do for a living, I know that 99% of it is just drivel. You know, it's just garbage. But there are ones that cut right through the noise. You know, they're the ones that you get really excited about. Right. And you start, like, looking around and asking yourself, I do Top 40 Radio for a living, but why is this song good?
Yeah.
Like, these are all supposed to be bad songs. Right. None of them are supposed to be any good. But she's really, really good. And My Man is a really great song. And it's like people like her and Lizzo that cut through the noise, and you're like, oh man, this is actually not bad. And so we got a hold of her because, you know, she's becoming a thing. You know, she doesn't have the easiest draw, but I hope she does well. And you know, we'll start our last episode before Bonnaroo with DeLacy on the What Podcast.
Hi, it's DeLacy.
Hi, DeLacy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's so exciting to talk to you. First off, because
you too.
When we stumbled upon you, this is what we really like the most about doing this show, is that when we have a moment like we don't really know what we're doing, so we just throw something up against the wall to see if it sticks and do a little thing called Bonnaroulette, and we just hit the play button, and whatever it lands on, it lands on. This year, when we did Bonnaroulette, DeLacy, My Man, started playing, and both the me and Barry both at the same time. I say this truthfully because we found some of our favorite people this way.
Absolutely.
We didn't know you beforehand. Literally 5 seconds into My Man, me and Barry looked each other dead in each other's eyes, and they just got larger and larger as the song kept going.
Amazing.
You have got a hit on your hands. You've got something special with this song. You must be really happy about it.
Thank you. I am. I'm really happy about it. I'm just really happy it's out in the world and everyone gets to hear it.
Yeah, how long have you been sitting on it?
Well, not very long, but, you know, I kind of wrote a whole album in August, and I didn't really know if I would ever release the music. I didn't really know what I would do with it. I just kind of made it. And so it's cool. Even though I haven't been sitting on it for very long and it all kind of happened fast for me, I was really just kind of like, wow, this is out, like, on Spotify, and people can listen to this. It's out in the world. Like, it's kind of surreal to me.
Tell us what that's like, because we've had several guests that have been, you know, toiling at it for a decade or more, gone through 3 or 4 iterations of the band. You know, they've... The 10-year, 15-year overnight sensation stories. You know, you were not that long ago in a. I don't forgot how I saw it described, the shittiest apartment in New York ever, maybe.
Yeah.
So how's life changed?
No, that was mine. I think for me, it's like, you know, it's definitely been a journey to get to this place as an artist, but it's just kind of a weird one. I have been writing for other people for like a few years. And I've recently had success at that. But before I had success at that, I was super lost. And I was like, what am I doing with my life? I don't think I ever want to I've never had anything enough to say that I've written like enough stuff for just myself. But I just was feeling really inspired because I was just really lost in the industry in general and didn't really know what I was doing with my life. And I just went to New York and I was like, I'm going to just try to write some music with my producer that I love to work with. And I was like, called him up and I was like, do you want to just make something? I don't know if we'll even write one song and it might suck really bad, but can we just make something that feels 100% me? Because I haven't done that yet. I've been writing with other artists and for other artists and with a bunch of pop producers and writers that are all amazing and super talented, but it also just, you know, at some point it's like I just kind of lost who I was as an artist. And so I just went to New York and I literally wrote a whole album in like 3 weeks. And I was like, I don't know what I'll do with this, but I really like it. And I like listening to it. So that's sick. I don't know what to do with it, but here we are.
It's interesting that that's the decision that you had to make because like you said, you were writing for other people. And at some point that becomes, it could possibly become a tad sterile. You don't really have much skin in the game when you're writing for somebody else. But the roster of people that you wrote with, that's a pretty impressive lineup when you start to look at, you know, oh, I don't know, the charts.
Thank you.
Writing a number one single doesn't necessarily happen to everybody.
No, I know. I'm very grateful.
That's nuts. So walk me through. So if you don't know Halsey, again, I got to remind people, Halsey may be a major superstar. There's a good 70% of the population who has no idea who she is, but she's got a number one single and you helped write it. How in the world did that come about?
You know, I wrote this song with some collaborators and she heard it and loved it so much. And, you know, she went into the studio and wrote, you know, wrote her own. She like wrote two on it and put it out. It all happened really fast. And it was so, I mean, I was so honored that she sang it, you know, and she made it her own and it turned out to be so big. None of us were expecting it.
Well, see, that's the part that is so baffling to me. And as a guy who's done this for 20 years, I still don't know the answer to this. When you have something that you wrote, right, and that you just put pen to paper and you create, who do you then send it to? Who do you then show it to that then puts it in front of the eyes and ears of Halsey? How does that happen? What is that process like?
Well, it's very, I mean, I'm signed as a songwriter. I'm signed to publishing. So, okay. Like, I have an amazing team of people that are, you know, and I also have been in the industry for a while now. I've been paying my dues, that's for sure. So I know a lot of people that are, you know, and I've had some close ones there, like, and I know a lot of artists. It's just, you know, it's just when it's the right song and it just happens to be the right situation. It's like timing is everything. It's really crazy in those situations.
And so when you have something that you really like, okay, just say it's Without Me and it's still a baby and it's still like a zygote. Do you send it to a certain person that you know will like that sort of style, or are you going to send it to everybody because you know you have something?
Yeah,
good question.
I don't know. I think it's always different. It's always different and it always goes to so many different people. And honestly, the way it gets to an artist or to anyone is always a different path. Like, literally no two stories are the same. It's so crazy. I've had so many different songs come out in so many different situations. Like, it's never been the same. So it's kind of a hard question to answer specifically. Well, but yeah, I mean, sometimes when I write a song, I'll be like, damn, blah, blah, blah would kill this. You know what I mean?
Right.
You hope. But it rarely ever works out that way. And then, you know, I've worked with a lot of these artists too. So then when I'm like writing with them, of course, I'm like, oh, well, this is for them. You know, they sing it. So it just kind of depends.
I got you.
So to kind of dive a little deeper on that, just because of the story you just told and how it's worked for you, do you change things? Do you find yourself, like the one that you just wrote that's so personal, before would you have said, you know, maybe so-and-so would never say that, or I need to soften that, or that's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, one of my things as a writer has always been, I kind of speak the truth. I don't sugarcoat anything that I say. And sometimes my lyrics are too out there. And a lot of the time I've had to cut back and, like, you know, kind of make things a little sweeter and less vulnerable or whatever you want to call it. For certain artists that don't feel comfortable. But, I mean, that's fine. It's got to be personal to whoever puts it out.
It's right.
Do what they would say. You know, that's why when I went and wrote an album, I was like, I wasn't holding anything back. I was thinking of it in a way where I was like, this is, no one's ever going to hear this. And even if they do, I don't care because it's just from me and I'll sing it. And I don't care what anyone thinks because I'm never, I have no shame. I'm like, whatever, I'll say whatever. So that's kind of like a thing about my music that is like, you know, I feel like a lot of it, once you guys hear more of my music, you'll kind of see, but a lot of it is like, I think a lot of things that people wouldn't, no one else would say about me probably.
So what is it, how does it make you feel now that you've, you know, exposed yourself basically and people like it a lot?
Yeah, I mean, it feels amazing. Of course, I didn't know if everyone was going to hate it. I was like, is this horrible? You know, it's how you always feel about your art, I feel like, or anything you create. You're like, is this the worst thing ever, or is it really good? I cannot tell.
DeLacy, I've been doing fart jokes on the radio for 20 years. I just assume everyone hates it.
I don't know. It sounds funny to me, but I'm immature.
But that's a defense mechanism.
For sure. I mean, but you're putting yourself out there in a vulnerable place, and for it to come back is any sort of feedback. Sometimes it's like, oh, thank God.
Totally. I mean, just the fact that like somebody wanted to put it out was exciting for me. I was like, not even knew if I was going to do that. You know, I never knew if I would do that.
Which DeLacy will people see in a couple weeks? Saturday afternoon, by the way. Who's stage at 4?
Oh, yeah, Saturday. Okay. I almost forgot.
I looked it up.
Yeah.
Damn, it's coming up so quick.
I know, right?
Well, I'm really excited for everyone to see it. I love performing, so I'm super excited. I'm going to perform, like, basically my whole album, too. We have the whole set down. My band is amazing. It's super grungy and raw and live, and I'm really excited about it.
I don't know if growing up in Orange County, you so much time as much as we did talking or thinking about a music festival in Tennessee, but we do tend to ask people the same question every time. What was your impression, or what is your impression of Bonnaroo?
I've never been, but I mean, all I know is that I've heard people say it's like the coolest one and the best one, so I felt really cool that I got on it.
But
I've never been.
And that's sort of the thing. Like, I've always wondered, especially in the industry, especially with people that live where you live and have Coachella
totally.
In your backyard.
Coachella and stuff. Yeah.
Right. Do you look at like Coachella and then see Bonnaroo and I'm like, oh, it's like a redneck cousin or something because it's in Tennessee.
No, not at all. I feel like they all have their own thing. I don't know. They all the music festivals, I feel like, have their own like thing about them. Also, you know, it's all about location. It's like its own city. Like, it's their own festival. I love all of them. I've never had like a bad taste about any of them so far.
Do you have something specific about your live show that you're doing specifically for Bonnaroo or for music festivals in general? Like, for instance, I say this because I was supposed to see you in New York a couple of weeks ago, one of these like record things, and I didn't make it, and I wonder how, I wish that I had, frankly, so that I could see the difference between you in an intimate room versus 4 o'clock in 102 degree weather at Bonnaroo.
Yeah, you know, it'll be my first time ever doing anything like this, so we'll
really?
See. I hope I do a good job.
I love that game.
I hope I live up to my...
I'm a little nervous,
but I'm also very excited.
Well, don't be nervous because if you know anything about Bonnaroo, it's full of love. There's nothing but love on the farm. Let me just make this offer to you because I think this is a strong one. If you need a backup dancer, we're here for you.
Solid. That's solid.
You know what?
Right there.
I might pick you up.
That's one of the things...
That'll be my special thing.
That would be special for sure. Oh, that would be memorable.
I've learned all my moves from Lizzo.
Of course, Lizzo.
One of the things we've learned talking with people is that the question really isn't, is your show better? Do you try harder at festivals? Because that presumes that, you know, you turn in 90% at some others. It's more the smaller, maybe intimate venue shows. It's kind of assumed that the people that are there bought their ticket to see you and they want to be there. Whereas in a festival, you might have 10, 20, 80% who've never heard of you. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity, the opportunity is to make new fans. So it's different that way, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's true. I've thought about that,
My Man is the single that's from the album. I'm not going to be the first one to make this connection, and I won't be the last. I absolutely love how Dolly Parton it is. And as somebody who loves Dolly Parton so much, boy, it is just, it's got that thread through it. And, you know, the first moment I heard it, I was like, oh my God, long live Dolly.
It's kind of, for me, I thought the same. It's kind of long live Dolly. Long live Dolly. Good for you for updating it. But how cool has Dolly always been?
Yeah, it's true. True. Right. It definitely stands on its own 2 feet for sure. But you've got to see that thread too, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like everyone, that's like something people randomly say to me, of course, like and in comments and stuff. And I'm like, you know, I would like to say I was, like, totally trying to do an updated Jolene, but, like, it was literally something I was going through that day. Like, a real supermodel was trying to steal my boyfriend, and I was, like, I came into the session, and I was so, like, fired up and emotional and, like, feeling insecure and vulnerable, and I was just, like, bitching about it for, like, 20 minutes, and I just, like, sang out that line, kind of, and we wrote the song so quickly. I even like just kind of wrote a lot of it on the spot. I was just like pretending the girl was right there and I was singing to her.
Hey, DeLacy, let me ask you this. Did she actually get him? Did it actually?
No.
That a girl.
Are you guys still together?
That's a mystery.
That's a mystery if you guys are still together. So here's the reason I say this is because you made a point to say a supermodel was trying to steal your boyfriend. That's a lot better than like an In-N-Out Burger waitress was trying to steal your man. At least it was a supermodel.
Hey, an In-N-Out waitress could be very hot.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good point. Yeah,
it hurts either way.
Look, I've watched She's All That. I know how I can go from zero to hero quickly. I got it.
What does this do now for your songwriting? Anything?
I'm trying to balance both. I've already written my album, so that's kind of nice because I don't need to spend so much time like in a studio trying to get the next songs. You know, we have them all planned out, and we already mastered a whole album. I'm really excited that I get to put it all out. But yeah, I'm still like going in with some artists, and I'm trying to, and I'm collaborating, and I'm excited about some other stuff front too.
But there's still somebody that you're writing for. Are you still writing things for other people while you know?
Yeah, I'm still writing with other people too. You know, I need to write all the time, or I go insane.
Is there somebody in particular that you think you, as a songwriter and who's written with other people and for other people, is there a voice that you specifically feel most comfortable with? Do you have a certain person's voice or a certain person's perspective that you think that you connect with the best and it's just easier to write for?
You know, I that's a really hard one too, because you don't really get to pick a lot of the time who you write for.
Sure.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I mean, there's artists that I love working with, but no, I mean, you know,
the reason I hate to interrupt you, but here's the reason why I ask it is because I love the stories of speechwriters like Jon Favreau for Obama. He's got to write in someone else's voice, right? Especially like I know a lot of stand-up comics. They go on to write for Bill Maher or for Letterman.
Yeah.
And they've got to figure out a way to take their humor and then write it in Letterman's voice. Some people just naturally do that better than others, and some take, you know, a while to start learning rhythms and stuff like that. I wonder if there's somebody that you just naturally immediately rolled with pretty easily, easier than others.
Yeah, so far I write the best for myself, I think, probably. It's just like the easiest, but I know, I mean, I hope there's someone else that I can like have continuing success with writing with.
Yeah.
I'm not done.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a fascinating question, which is obviously why we keep asking about it, DeLacy.
Obsessed with process. I don't know why we're so obsessed with process around here. We are.
It's that, have you tried writing in a male voice, a female? I mean, obviously a female voice, but have you tried, you know?
Totally. I've totally written songs like from a perspective of a guy before.
Yeah, are you about to ask a question if she can write a K-pop song? Because I'm going to say no. I'm going to guess no.
I have written a K-pop song.
No way. Stop it.
Yeah, so let's not go there.
How? What? How in the hell does that happen?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. You never know where your songs are going to go. It's crazy.
Who called you and said, we need a K-pop song?
Yeah, whose idea was it?
No, I mean, it just landed with a K-pop artist. And I was like, okay, cool.
No kidding.
There you go. That's what we're wondering.
So Nothing will surprise you.
Man, I am an idiot.
Was it the kind of thing that was commissioned? They said, hey, we need this. Or was it something you wrote and somebody heard it and
that
said, that would work?
That was something I wrote. That was something that I wrote that they heard that ended up with a band.
Yeah, I just think that's so interesting.
That is so fascinating, man.
I've talked to John Prine and people like that who said, I tried to write a country song, but it kept coming out hip-hop, or he didn't say that, but rhythm and blues.
Yeah,
how does that work?
I spent some time in Nashville, too, and I hopefully will have a country song out one day. I'm determined. That's one of my goals.
Wait, how long were you in Nashville?
I've only been there a couple of times, a handful of times.
Oh, you didn't actually live there for a minute?
No.
Oh, okay.
I've been to Wright.
Have you even dove into the schedule? Have you even dove into the day that you're going to be there? Have you asked your people if you're staying a night or two? What is your plan for the weekend?
As of now, I think I'm only staying one night, which is sad, but it's like because of scheduling stuff.
Is it Friday night or Saturday night?
Saturday. I get in Friday night. I think I even leave Saturday night. No. I think I leave Sunday.
Okay.
So I think I'll be there tonight.
Well, I can't wait to meet you at Bonnaroo, and I hope...
I can't wait.
Bonnaroulette.
Oh, amazing. Thank you.
Yeah.
I love you.
Well, I hope you all the success in the world, and I really, really want the single to work, and I think that it will. You've got a really, really, really great voice, and boy, you got a sound works right now.
Thank you so much. Seriously, that means so much to me.
Just so charming, so cute, so adorable. She's the kind of person that I really like getting behind. Wait. As far as an industry person, as far as an artist, I really like getting behind her. That's what I meant to say. That really came out much differently than I thought it would.
Kind of creepy.
I realize that now. So, but there was some news over the weekend. I was actually really surprised about this because it's been years since they've done like artist editions this late in the game. The biggest artist edition that's ever happened in the history of Bonnaroo to me is the week before Bonnaroo, they announced Fun. Fun was going to be on the Sunday, that tent. And at the time, Fun had a number one song. It's the only, and this is a bit of history, for Bonnaroo history, if you don't know. There's only been one artist in Bonnaroo's history that's had a number one single while they were playing the farm, while they were playing Bonnaroo, and it was Fun.
Right, you said that once before with, I guess when we were talking to Jeff Cuellar.
Didn't know that.
That is interesting.
He didn't know that either.
He didn't know it. Buffett was a last minute. Jimmy Buffett
was a
last minute.
That's a great one. Yeah, that was the year the National was on Witch, and it was in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I just remember, and this was before I was really into the National, it was just like so hot, and he's in all black, and it's the National, and it's in the middle of the day. And I'm like, this is terrible. What is this droning on? But that was the same year that Buffett. So I've got a hysterical Buffett story about that Bonnaroo, and I tell this story all the time on the air. So, turns out Buffett doesn't drink. Jimmy Buffett is not a drinker,
right,
which is hysterical considering he's created an entire lifestyle, an entire brand, selling people on
margaritas.
The man has been sober for like 30 years.
That is funny.
So he has this beer brand that he's hawking, the Land Shark, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I will never forget when Jimmy Buffett was when he got there. As soon as he got off his bus, right, I just happened to stumble upon Jimmy Buffett getting out of his bus. So he gets out of his bus, and they're walking with his entourage, and his manager, whoever, pulls out of his, like, side pocket, out of his bag, pulls out a Land Shark, opens up the Land Shark, dumps half of it out, and then hands it to Jimmy Buffett. And that was right before he walked through the media tent. So right before he got...
Product placement.
Exactly. Right before he got to the media area when he was going to do all the interviews, there's going to be all these photos and everybody around, the manager hands him a half full Land Shark, and he walked through the entire festival with a Land Shark. And I followed him around. I'll say I followed Jimmy Buff for half an hour. He got right to the Witch stage. They walked him right to the Witch stage. And what did he do with that Land Shark?
Poured it out.
Threw it right to the trash.
Wow.
It was... genius.
Wow.
Absolutely genius.
That is pretty funny. I thought you were going to say you told him good work.
Great job.
Good job.
What was it? What did I say, Taco?
Great work. Yeah.
So I told Billy Joel when I had the moment to meet Billy Joel. Great work. All right. So
he's a wordsmith.
Big edition, Rainbow Kitten Surprise added to the Grizz Super Jam.
Right.
I'm trying to think of any other additions that might have been made at the last minute that were big and notable. I don't think. I'm thinking like a year's past. I don't think I can think of any other Other than Jimmy Buffett, there was the replacement.
Who was the band? Was it the Avets that had to cancel or Mumford?
Mumford canceled. Mumford. And then it was Jack Johnson was put in his place. Yeah, but put in their place.
That's kind of a different.
Yeah, Jack Johnson just always available. I mean, it's not like he's that busy. The guy, I actually talked to Sean, who actually booked that, Sean O'Connell, who used to be the guy that sort of helped out. He's now the president of the Hangout Festival. Well, I talked to him about that moment of how they got Jack Johnson that day, and he straight up told me, he's like, when we lost Mumford, I'm pals with Jack, and I knew he wasn't doing anything. He's literally he said the only thing that I was worried about was just getting him on the phone, because apparently when he lives out there in Hawaii, all he does is surf, and he lives like a vagabond, and he barely has a house. It's just like a shack with a bed in it. And if you can get him on the phone, it's shocking. It's totally stunning. Wow. So he's like, I knew I could get him here, but I didn't know if I could get him on the phone. That's crazy, man. That is absolutely crazy.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, when you have money.
It was a good show.
He did fine. Yeah. I mean, he did fine. I mean, to be able to replace anybody.
Right. That's what I mean.
It's a pretty big. That was the big news this week, because everybody's worried about Cardi B canceling. Cardi B possibly.
Right.
There's this worry that she's going to cancel, and I can't even really figure out why she would cancel, but she's canceling a whole bunch of shows. And
with her health. She had,
wasn't?
Yeah, she had plastic surgery, and it's not healing well.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it on?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not that big a follower.
Okay, so she had to cancel this past weekend's festival show.
Yeah, for the last, 3 weeks worth of stuff.
Really?
Canceled. Yeah.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good for Bonnaroo.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention, you know, we talked about last week being safe, the whole threat.
Yeah.
I think they've figured that out. But couple that with the fact that there is a new sheriff and just tell everybody, be careful.
You don't really know what to expect when somebody new is taking over.
I don't know what to expect.
I really don't know what to think. We tried to get him on the show.
Right.
And he didn't answer.
He didn't answer yet. I got to reach back out because I get reports from him all during the week from safety, you know. Traffic updates, all that kind of stuff.
You know what would be interesting is I wonder if the old sheriff, did he beat the old sheriff like in an election?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, Sheriff Graves lost the election, and I can't even remember this guy's name now, but find out.
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. It does scare me a little bit.
Yeah, it should.
Makes me a little nervous.
It should. I don't know what to tell people. Just be careful.
Either.
Just be very careful.
Look, I mean, I've known somebody that has been, I mean, they got stopped by the Bonnaroo people, and they were randomly searched, and it was cops that did it on the way in. Now, it was a total random thing, and guess what all was taken?
Yeah, the drugs?
Yeah.
Well, I know a couple of guys from here, football player types, they usually work security, and one of my friends said he was going through a guy's vehicle and found some drugs because the kid was an idiot and apparently basically had him on the dashboard or something. And my friend kept messing with him, and the kid started crying.
Oh,
please
no.
Don't tell my dad. This is going to ruin my life. And my friend finally looked at him and said, "Nah, I'm just messing with you.
Oh, that's
get
good.
Out of here."
Oh, good for him.
Let him sweat it out.
That
for
poor
a while.
Kid.
Yeah, I mean. You know, that's the reality. Sometimes the security are literally just football players who got there the day before, and sometimes they're the police. So we really don't know what to expect.
Do you know, speaking of security, you know what I really like about Bonnaroo? It's that I can go every year, and there are certain security people that are still working the same post every year.
Yeah, my neighbor works the main stage.
That's right. I know her.
You know her? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And believe me, there have been years past where my credentials weren't where, you know, they usually are, and I've tried to use that angle. She does not
care. She doesn't play, man.
She does not play around.
She's very serious about it. But the other hand, another kid that I know was working, and I said, "When did you get here? You know, the event starts on Wednesday or Thursday. When did you get here? Tuesday." And I said, "Is that for training?" And he laughed. He said, "Training was them handing me a T-shirt and saying, now go away."
Yeah.
That was training.
So where we pick up our credentials, they also have the employee sort of orientation in the same sort of space. That employee meeting lasts about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It is pretty funny.
It's probably, here are your post times, show up.
Show up, yep. So I love the idea of like seeing the same security people in the same spots every year. And the other thing that I love, especially on Wednesday, and we've expanded our footprint for the weekend over the last couple of years, we start going on Wednesday now. Mm-hmm. And I love Wednesday because we can walk in and travel and traverse Cineru and watch them putting it together.
Right.
That is the most invigorating thing in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is such a, I can't explain to you the feeling of feeling like being completely alone, it feels like, in this giant swath of property, while it's like being built around you and you're like by yourself, essentially.
Yeah,
you know,
that giant 700 acres is basically empty.
Yes. While
and then 24 hours later, it's full.
Yes. And it's like the feeling of being like in the middle of New York City, right? Where, you know, action is happening around you everywhere, but then you look around and you're on a street with nobody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking about it. It's kind of like watching a time lapse.
Yeah.
In real life.
Yeah, you can just sit there and watch them build things that you're going to like celebrate for days.
And we last year we walked through, we've told the story, but it was so cool to walk through there and see the lights.
Yeah.
The lights in the trees. That was with nobody there.
So nobody there.
That was kind of mind-blowing. Don't know what we're going to get this year. It's going to be fun.
We will get Patrick Droney on the... Speaking of, you know, we talk about Cardi B canceling, and I put this out as a tweet earlier this week. I found out that if Cardi B were to cancel, Lizzo will not be replacing her. So the idea that most people were throwing out there because Lizzo had a giant hole in her schedule makes perfect sense. They're both on the same record label. They've got, you know... sort of a similar style.
Right.
You know, it would be a really, really, really fun show. It's not going to happen. She's going to be at the MTV Movie Awards on Sunday. So I basically was told by the head of Atlantic Records, not happening.
Not happening.
So I guess the reason I bring that up is because Cardi B is about the same time as Patrick Droney. So conflicts get a little easier if that was, I can't imagine anyone was picking one or the other, Cardi B or Patrick Droney. There could not be two different artists on the planet. But we did get a chance to talk to him, Patrick Droney, at the Who stage on the What podcast.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
So tell us about Patrick Droney. Where in the world did Patrick come from?
Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania, moved to New Jersey. My dad was a session guitar player, so I grew up with blues music and, you know, guitar playing kind of since I was a baby. And, I picked up the guitar when I was 7, and that's kind of the only thing I wanted to do, and that's all I've done since then.
I have to ask, how old are you now?
I'll be 27 in July.
Okay. Am I reading correctly in some of the online bio stuff that you toured with B.B. King and James Brown?
Yeah. Yeah. So my first tour was with James Brown when I was 12.
I was going to say, that's awesome.
I was one of those young guitar singers, you know, and I was really lucky enough to play with a lot of my heroes when I was a kid and just really immersed in the blues community. And, B.B. King, Double Trouble, all those guys that I grew up kind of admiring, I was able to share the stage with, and it was a pretty amazing young experience.
And you were 12? That's what I'm
saying. Yeah.
Wow. What in the world was a 12-year-old doing hanging out with B.B. King and James Brown?
I know. Well, you know, I won Robert Johnson Foundation. They had an award called the New Generation Award. It was kind of like the best young blues player in the country. And I won that when I was around that age, and that kind of put me on the map. And, you know, just through circumstance and people, it's a small community, you know, of guitar players and blues music, especially back, I mean, at this point it was, 13, 14 years ago. But, just guys like B.B. King, like, really enjoyed passing the torch to, like, the next generation. And
they're both
I just ended up.
He is great about that, for sure.
I've got to start all over now with my Patrick Droney obsession.
I tried to tell
because
you.
I am baffled here. Okay, so you enter, you pick up the guitar at 7, you realize that you're pretty good at this, you're growing up in New Jersey, and you enter, do you enter this competition? Does somebody else enter you? How does that work? And where did you go to perform? And then how exactly did you win? Who were the other people around you? How old were they? Standard fare. I mean, I could go on and on here.
It was
Dish.
It was,
come on.
I don't know how it came up. I think I might have seen it in like a Guitar Player magazine or something like that. But just did a video in my basement on like a camcorder, and we sent it to the Robert Johnson Foundation, which is really just his family. You know, his son and his grandson. And then just a little while later, I got a phone call from from Claude Johnson, who was Robert Johnson's grandson, and I'm sorry, his son, and he told me that, you know, they chose me as the new generation winner and flew me out to Hazelhurst, Mississippi, where I played with Robert Lockwood Jr., who was the last living Delta blues musician who actually learned from Robert Johnson himself. My guitar's hanging in the Robert Johnson Museum in Mississippi, and those are my second family. Yeah.
And so from that random show that you were flown to in Mississippi, how did you catch the eye of somebody like B.B. King and the rest? Did you just big word of mouth?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I first met B.B. King before this. He would do the meet and greets and, you know, the whole thing, and he would always love sitting down with young musicians and giving advice. So once I started getting on the map, you know how booking goes and word of mouth goes. And I think a guy like B.B. King always loved a younger gunslinger opening for him. And you know, he'd always call you back on stage and just like give you a moment with his crowd to clap for you, you know, just to kind of nod his head. And then, you know, just the chance to be part of like the Experience Hendrix tour, for instance, where it was, you know, me and Robbie Krieger and Billy Cox and Mitch Mitchell and Double Trouble playing Red House. Stuff like that, where it's just, holy cow.
And you met all these people before puberty. This is unbelievable.
It all sounds made up.
Yes, it does.
There is no way you've interacted with all of these people.
You know, when I was 12, I couldn't make a fist, much less get the eyes and ears of B.B. King.
How is it, Pat? I mean, Brad and I talked last week, I guess, and we mentioned it several times. We sort of had gateway artists that led us to Robert Johnson. There's very few people that start, you know, at that level, especially as a 12-year-old. Is that in part because of your dad? I mean, was he just sort of like I've done with my kids, sort of listen to this kind of thing? Or did you just take right to it yourself?
That was my dad. I mean, I credit my dad with most good things in my life. He just kind of had me skip the line a little bit. But, you know, he was always showing me, it's all about context, you know, like why am I able to do this? And why was, if I sound Clapton, well, why did Clapton do what he did? Oh, it's because Robert Johnson, you know, just kind of put me back in the context wheel. And then, but I just became obsessive. You know, I was a kid who was doing my fourth grade music class project on Lightning Hopkins. that was just an obsession. But you know, the same token, I was also being shown really great songwriting, like, you know, Joni Mitchell and James Taylor and the Eagles, and kind of realized really early in that process that, you know, you can play guitar all you want, but without the context of a good song, you know, it doesn't really have legs. And I realized that there's going to be a little bit longer of a road for me to get to where I wanted to go as an artist. I didn't just want to be, you know, a blues guitar playing kid. I mean, I wanted to really expand this and tell a story and, you know, cut to 15 years later where I'm really, really making my introduction now.
Yeah.
As a pop artist, as somebody who's making mainstream music with the reverence for, you know, this genre that I grew up in. And it's a really beautiful way that all ties together to the now.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a crazy low-key perspective that I carry.
I just want to quickly just finish up and bottle the edge on the bio. So once you do all this and then you eventually move from New Jersey to Nashville, at what age did you say, okay, I think I need to make a go at this and put roots down in Nashville?
That happened over a pretty long period of time. After that kind of stint as a teenager, just playing, I decided to go to NYU. I went to Clive Davis's program at NYU. And I spent my time there just, you know, really diving into the business of music and becoming my biggest advocate and learning exactly what I needed to do to kind of get to where I wanted to be. And New York was a really defining chapter for me. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I got signed to a publishing deal in Los Angeles. I spent 3 years in L.A. and really honing my thing. And then it wasn't until about 3 years ago now, when I decided I'd move to Nashville, where I just saw the opportunity, the community, the songwriting, kind of the craft here. It just was like, this makes sense. This is the time I'm going to, because I've just really been patient, you know, because you get, you know, one chance at a second impression, a first impression, a second chance, you know. So it's like, all right, this seems like the right time, and everything just kind of aligned. So it's been 3 years in Nashville now, and it's just been really brilliant.
I saw the NYU thing, and I'm curious, and it sounds like kind of a silly question, but I asked another guy whose resume, he studied classical guitar at all kinds of the France and all over the world, and it having played with B.B. King and played with James Brown and the legends, you know, the guys that have basically invented the genre, and then to go to a school, what I would think you would learn plenty from playing with those guys and studying those guys. What did you hope to gain from, you know, going to a school for music versus, you know, going to the school of hard knocks? So to
and
speak.
Just doing, getting on the road.
Just getting on the road. Yeah. Just doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the reality is I didn't go to Berklee for a reason. I didn't go to a music playing program. I went to a business program. You know, I wasn't going to be able to go learn guitar the way I had already kind of been immersed in it for me.
Right.
I think it's valid and it's a great way to get your theory going on stuff. But for me, it was like, all right, I've already been through the ringer and I want to go. And, you know, for me, I was taking criticism classes with, like, you know, Rolling Stone writers. And, like, for me, it was more about, like, you know, music law and just stuff like that.
Is that something you picked up from seeing those guys? Because I know a lot of the old guys, you know, that they all wish they'd had a business degree before they signed a contract.
That's a great point, because I mean, if you're Patrick and you say, look, I'm sharing the road with, look at the list of people I'm sharing the road with. Why would I leave that to go schlep in some sort of, you know, college that I already look at the experience I'm getting? It's the business part of it
that makes sense.
They all have probably missed and probably wish that they had more of.
Yeah, and look, you know, it's I'm trying to have a true career, a long, long career, and at this point, you know, just having the ability to be my biggest advocate and understand what I think the big thing with those guys is they didn't know, they just wanted to play music and they. Now, whoever was going to help them out, cool. But they didn't have their publishing and they didn't have their masters.
Right, exactly.
It's just for me, I saw an opportunity to really educate myself and just get deeper into how I can be my own boss and make my music a true business.
So makes a lot of sense.
So back to your songwriting, and this is what I find to be fascinating, is you are first and foremost a storyteller. You tell amazing stories and you have a terrific way to turn a phrase. And that's a muscle that needs to be worked out. And to be able to get there where you are at 27 is pretty remarkable. But how does that work? How does that work in where the industry is now? You don't really see many blues storytellers tearing through. Now that you have the business side of it, how do you take what you have and cut through the noise?
Well, look, it's kind of doing it for itself. I think right now is actually a better time than ever to be honest and authentic, and people are really craving just honesty and storytelling. And I mean, look at the pop music spectrum. Everything is flipping to this story perspective. I mean, I don't care what you think about certain music, but it's like songwriting right now really is spotlight. And for a guy like me, I just don't think, I think certain things don't go out of style, you know, soulfulness, the right melody and the right lyric, you know, a story that just relates. For me, it's like all I do is I tell my story, and I know that, you know, my responsibility is if I do that, people who don't have the chance or the ability to speak for themselves, they can feel like they can relate. So that's really my litmus test. That's how I go. I mean, you know, we just signed to Warner Brothers, and like there are people out there at the very top that really want to push authentic artistry and kind of redefine what it is to be, you know, an artist in 2019. And I'm really, really inspired actually at the climate. Instead of being pessimistic, you know, it's like, I think there's more opportunity now than ever to cut through the noise, and it's just happening organically, and I'm really inspired by it.
And I think that you have something, and you touched on it a second ago, I think that you have something that is where my thread usually is, and it's with artists who are not scared of being vulnerable. And boy, you got that. You've got that vulnerability locked down. I mean, you play that the Brooklyn song. I mean, that is nothing but being brokenhearted and vulnerable. High hope, totally vulnerable. It's the honesty, it's the openness, it's the trust that somebody's going to give you the time to listen to it, and then it's the trust that they're going to be careful with your vulnerabilities when you put them out there. So
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you. You know, it's just wake up every day inspired to just keep telling my story, and then knowing that it's connecting to people like you guys, you know.
How, given everything that we've said about, you know, the going to school, the education, being on the road, what was it then that made you decide on Nashville? Because, I mean, I assumed you could, the music scene in New York is pretty good, the music scene in L.A. What was it about Nashville?
Yeah, you know, like, look, everything's timing. Everything's kind of like a matching of preparation with opportunity. And for me, you know, I was in a deal in L.A. You know, my publisher was this guy, Lance Freed. His dad was Alan Freed, who, you know, defined the term rock and roll. And Lance was one of the great music publishers. And when I was getting out of that deal, Lance really sat me down. He said, I think this is the time that we go look at Nashville. And I just started taking some trips down here. And it was like, wow, just felt the energy. I felt the focus on the craft. You know, Los Angeles is, I love LA, you know, and right now LA makes a lot of sense for me now that my thing's moving, but it's not just a music town, it's an entertainment town. And New York is not what it used to be. There really isn't much of a community. But Nashville, honestly, is still just a music city, and the song comes first. And that's just what really appealed to me. And I came here and just put my head down. That was it.
And so from Nashville to now Bonnaroo, I don't know what your tour schedule and the shows that you've played in the past necessarily have been, but I'm guessing it's your first Bonnaroo. I'm guessing maybe one of your first festivals. How did the Bonnaroo people find you? Did your people find them? What was the process like to get into the festival this year?
Well, this is my first Bonnaroo, and I'm very, very excited. You know, this is just one of those just world-class festivals that, you know, growing up is like, God, I just want to play Bonnaroo. And, yeah, you know, as far as how we got discovered there, you know, I think it was a combination of just the buzz of what we've done this year with the EP, and just word of mouth. And I know, you know, I have a great agent who, you know, everybody on my team is such a true believer in what I do. And it just percolates out to anybody who's touching the project. Like, there's just true passion here. And I think the festival really saw that and feels the same way. And, you know, it's just everything here is happening really organically. So I'm just excited right now to get this thing out on the road and you know, we've played a good amount of shows this year and we've sold out everything we've done. And just the transaction between people is what I'm most, you know, interested in, just going out there and seeing this music resonate in real time. So a place like Bonnaroo is honestly a dream stage for me to do that.
First of all, I hope you're keeping a diary, because listening to you drop and talk about all these people that you've already met is like reading the encyclopedia of
yeah, Patrick, you're going
American
by,
music.
You're going by it a little too fast for me.
It's just incredible.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
What was it about now, the here and now, that made this record right? I mean, I hear from a lot of artists, you know, who've written 100 songs, but they weren't ready for an album, or they've had 3 songs and they're ready for an album. So what is it about now that made it right for you?
Are you asking about the specific songs or just the timing of
putting an album together and everything? What, getting to this point, it sounds like you're very intentional about things now. So what was it about this timing for put this out?
Yeah, like I said, it really has been a patience game for me, and understanding timing, and it's half gut instinct of like, okay, I've lived enough life at this point, and there's so much to be pulling from that it's almost like I am irresponsible to not put this story out and start, you know, kind of giving back to what I've been given. And I think just a combination of that, the fact that, you know, I believe in things being meant to be. And when I kind of made this last shift to come to Nashville and the team around me that came together and all the stars aligning, it was just like, okay, a combination of all the experience, finally feeling like I'm really in my skin and in my body and in myself as an artist and like a player and a writer. And it just kind of was one of those things where it had to happen. Like, the second everything came together, there was no stopping this. This was like a little train that could. I mean, part of it I can't even explain. It just was, you know, it's one of those things. It's intangible in a certain way, but I'm so ready to just knock this door down.
You know, hey, Pat, good for you. You know, this is as good of a compliment as I can give. I like Patrick so much, and I love his songwriting so much. He's one of these guys that I wish I could get to write a song about me. He's one of those guys, not about me specifically, but about like, God, hey, Patrick, let me tell you something about this thing that's happening in my life. Could you write a song about that? That's the kind of guy, like, he's the kind of guy I want to write a song about a story that I tell him. And nice. I guess you're going to tell those stories. Bonnaroo, Sunday, 3:45, you're up against Lemon Twigs, Hobo Johnson, Princess. It's going to be a nice day. You have any plans for anybody that you want to see? Have you looked at the schedule at all?
The National plan? I saw the National plan. They're my favorite bands.
Yeah, it's Saturday, sure.
Yeah, I'll probably come early. But Sunday, man, I'm going to play. And then once we're done, we'll see what's going on. But kind of getting myself in the headspace. I've got to go there and really show our stuff and have a good time.
It is the moment that could change your life, you know? We've talked to artist after artist after artist that said the Bonnaroo stage, that's the one that turned everything for us. So could be you this year, man. I'm really excited for you. I'm really excited to meet you on the farm. We'll see you soon, and good luck Sunday, okay? Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick.
I just loved his voice. I loved his tone. The idea that this kid was 12 years old and more accomplished at 12 than I will be 112 is fascinating to me. I'm just blown away by this kid's story.
Yeah, it's a great story. And what a what a smart guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's playing with those guys at 12. He could very easily have just
rode that out forever.
Yeah. I mean, he's learning from the best, you know, he's getting a master class from the best,
right.
And then decided, I need to be smart about this, so I'm going to go get a degree in business.
I didn't tell this story when we were talking to him because, I mean, the conversation's not about me, but when I was 19, I was going to college at University of Tennessee, and then subsequently here at UTC, University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and I was going for communications, mainly because I just wanted to be in radio. My dream was always to be in radio, so I was going and to do radio. Mm-hmm. And so I was walking around the campus of UTC, and there was a radio station set up doing a live broadcast, what's called a remote. And I just walked up to him and was like, hey, how can I get hired to do this radio thing? Because that's what I'm going to school for. And the guy's name's Gene. He gave me the best piece of advice that I share with every kid from now on, from then and for the rest of my career. He said, call every day until you get hired.
Right.
And I did. And I finally got hired. And about 3 months into working at the radio station, I looked around and I said, why am I going to college for this?
Yeah. Yeah.
why am I? I'm learning everything I want to know literally right here. Why am I paying you when I'm getting paid?
Yeah.
It made no sense.
I agree. And in most cases, especially in music, that would have made sense for him. Why does he need a degree? But there are so many stories of musicians who have been taken advantage
right.
of. They sign bad contracts. They don't get the royalties, you know, that are due them because they didn't know how to handle it. So smart what he did.
And if you're going to be really, really successful in this and have a long, long career, you can't just be a performing musician.
No.
I mean, you can, but it's going to be a lot easier if you're Ryan Tedder. I mean, Ryan Tedder is writing songs for everybody on the planet. You know, he helps write U2's album. He's writing songs for 5 Seconds of Summer and Shawn Mendes and people like that. And, oh, by the way, he's One Republic.
Yeah.
So, you know, he could very well just be One Republic. But all the money he's making doing all the other stuff that he's doing, watch right. out. And if Patrick Droney can do that, dude, it all started because he decided to leave. I can't believe I'm saying this. Leave B.B. King.
Yeah.
And leave James Brown.
Yeah.
To do
and go
it.
To school and get his world together before releasing an album. So it was really interesting.
I like him a lot. I don't know if I would have made the same call. I don't think I would have been smart enough to make that call.
Well, as he said, his dad is a big influence. I'm going to guess that they had that conversation many times.
Here's the other thing I like about him, and I wasn't going to bring this up in the conversation with him. He has no streams. He has no sales. Like, you can't find him anywhere. This kid is legitimately just now starting,
right.
And it feels like we're watching it bud.
Right.
We're watching a bud bloom, and
well,
I get to be on the ground floor of it. I love stuff like that.
That's what I thought the morning of the interview. I mean, that's what we were getting, this kid out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then we hear his background. That was what was so mind-blowing.
So you're crushing my dreams that this was sort of a little discovery that we get to bloom?
No, we did. I mean, no, it's very much still that same thing, but then to find out he has that background is what I'm talking about.
The other thing, too, is like now I want to go to Nashville and just find him because you know it's in some sort of tiny room. He's probably playing a grocery store every now and then.
Right. People are eating bagels and wondering who the kid is in the corner performing right now.
And you're never going to be able probably to see him like that again.
Yeah. I agree.
All right. But any other odds and ends? I got through the whole thing without saying the W word.
Don't do it.
I can't believe it.
Don't do it.
What else do we need to do?
What do we need
through?
To do? We are 2 days away, 3 days away from leaving.
I'm going to do my final shopping list today.
Yep.
I'm getting all the Bloody Mary things today because we have a tent in our Camp Nut Butter just for Bloody Marys.
Right.
We're getting all the
special surprise. I worked on that at home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every year I try to add something dumb and stupid to camp just to, you know, jazz it up and make one of my Bonnaroo do's and don'ts, make camp fun.
Yep.
So I came up with this idea with Nikki T to have something added to camp this year, and we'll reveal it in some sort of tweet or something when we get there on Wednesday.
It's pretty funny.
It's really fun. It's really fun. And I don't know, and if somebody has done this in the past, you'll have to tweet us once you see it, but I don't know if it's ever been done before.
No, I don't know. And I did try. I think we can reveal this because I still think it's funny. And maybe someone will, but I did try to find a microwave. I haven't found one yet.
So I had this really dumb idea to...
I think Hot Pockets and a bag of popcorn. With
popcorn,
just hearing
is
that,
where I'm going, man.
Just hearing that ding would be worth it.
We started thinking, like, me and Lord Taco were like, we have the generator already because we plug up all the podcast stuff. Why not just go ahead and plug up a microwave with it too and see if we can make some food?
While one of us is running the vacuum, cleaning the carpet, soup's on.
The other thing I said is, like, we could bring a pizza just microwave slices of pizza on, like, without leaving camp. And the idea of having a microwave at camp, I don't know, unless you have an RV,
right?
Can't be at anyone else's camp.
I just think the Hot Pockets would be hilarious.
Ding,
ding,
yeah,
it's ready,
ready. I'm gonna pack today. I think I'm gonna pack today.
Yeah, I got all. I'm starting to put it all in the same place so that I can see it.
You got your stack?
Yeah, my stack.
You get your stack?
My pile of stuff.
My pile has been on my front porch for like a week.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's the best. That was the best move. I had this nightmare. Oh my god, I had a Bonnaroo nightmare. Would that be a Bonnamare? I don't think that works. So I was watching. So apparently, a big storm came through Chattanooga a couple nights ago. And all of my Bonnaroo stuff was there on the front porch. And I had this dream that it all got blown away, like into the ether. And I had no Bonnaroo stuff. And all I was being yelled at, you're not buying one thing!
Yeah,
you're
buying
with nothing!
Brad tends to overbuy.
I talked to Nick yesterday. He was on the phone. He goes, yo, man. And how many people at camp say this every year? It is the thing that we hear from everyone every year, and it's always a lie. Man, I was really trying to go minimalistic this year. Everyone says that, and it's such a lie.
Yeah, it is such a lie. I actually grabbed a couple of things, and I thought, no, I'm not going to bring them this year. And then I thought, no, put it in the pile, because as soon as you get up there, you're going to wish you had it.
Man, I really do wish that I brought that microwave.
Yeah, I should have brought the microwave.
We really do need 200 more square feet of carpeting. I should have gotten that more carpet.
I'm trying to figure out how to get a refrigerator up there, too.
Well, we are not, I can't believe I'm telling you this, but we did 1 year sneak in a keg. I know we broke the rules big time, but I got a keg in. We had a tap handle and everything. The problem with the keg is that, yeah, we know how to work it. I mean, we've got people who run bars at our camp, but you just can't keep the damn thing cold enough. There's too much ice. There's too much ice that you have to... I mean, we went through maybe 25 bags of ice for that keg.
That was a great year, because what do we mix with it?
Watermelon.
Watermelon. That was really good.
We literally, in the shell of a watermelon, after it was eaten, we poured the beer into the watermelon and drank it out of it.
That was pretty delicious. Yeah, that was also the same year that somebody came to camp on Sunday and made Eggs Benedict.
Yeah, we haven't seen him since.
That was pretty good.
He whipped up the grill and started just walking over, giving everybody eggs. We're like, where did this guy come from? We don't even know him.
Eggs Benedict.
Man, I just can't wait. I just can't wait.
I'm excited. I told you before, this is right now is when I start having the night sweats, because I start imagining the W word going very badly.
Yeah.
This one looks pretty good.
Yeah. I've said this before, but I want to keep saying it because I'm so excited about it. That moment we get to the top of Mont Eagle and I get to look out over into the left and see so much farmland to the left. And as I go down that hill with the windows down, it's my legit favorite moment of my life. It is legit my favorite moment of my life.
Pretty great. It definitely is. You feel like you're leaving one world and driving right into another one.
It is the only time, maybe a couple other times in my life, but this is the most regular, the most euphoric moment that I have.
Pretty great. And I wanted to say thanks to everybody for sticking with us. I mean, we did this for a year. We never would have imagined we would continue. And we look forward. We have so many things lined up this week. I hope we get to do them all. People that we're going to see.
Yeah.
People that want us to come by their camps. I think we're going to do a couple of podcasts from there.
Yeah, we're gonna do the beer share at Red Aroo.
We're going to do that.
We're going to try to do the Roo Bus party on Wednesday night.
We're going to try to do...
Oh, we have presents. Nice. Lord Taco just told us you have presents. Thank you so much.
Should say we're going to try to do as many podcasts or whatever as we can from up there. The internet is always sketchy.
Yeah.
So no promises.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll do anything live because it's just so difficult to count on that internet. But we'll figure something out.
It's one of these things where you have all the best intentions. It's almost just like going to shows. You want to do it, but just things like, you know, camp happens and you just sit there and you just... But I almost said it. The W word being better is going to help, but at the same time, you just get tired of walking sometimes. I mean, I turned down Alt-J last year because I didn't want to walk across Center Room.
It was going to be a hike.
We turned down Alt-J.
I know.
For that kid.
Yeah.
Who will stay nameless. That damn kid smoking a cigarette cost us Alt-J.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, we copped an attitude. Cop to it.
Yeah, we did. All right, I guess that's it.
See you guys on the farm.
Right. See you on Wednesday.
Through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.